living right now. You know, the Bible says, Leviticus chapter 25 and verse number 10, it says, proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. And so it is part of the message of the Bible to proclaim liberty. So it's good to be here this morning. And Dave is not in the studio with me. My son is actually running the board, the what they call the production engineer. Noah, good morning.
Good morning.
We've already been talking on the way over here and everything, so it's not like when I talk to Dave, but he's busily running the other side over there, and there's more to it than you might think, and so I appreciate him doing that and taking the time out of his day and his school to come down and help me out, so I appreciate that very much, and I'll let him work that side of the board this morning. That's what they call this contraption here between us, the board. But anyway, it is good to be here today, and I have been trying for several weeks to talk about the subject of ruler's law versus people's law, and I'm going to get into that today. But as I was saying, there's some things that I have learned over the years, and I'm very thankful for that. I'm certainly not an expert, but I am a student, a scholar. You know, the word scholar, sometimes we use that in an intimidating sense, but actually it just means a student. And I'm a student of history. I'm a student of the Bible. And there's so many things that we can learn from our history, if we would just apply them to our lives today, and even our government. And I started at the beginning of the new year talking about civil government in America, actually before the new year. And we look at it from a scriptural, historical approach with a present-day application. That's sort of the thesis, or the what we're working from, I guess would be the proper way to say it this morning. But I was thinking today about history and how history, in order to learn from history, you have to be able to connect the dots. You have to be able to put the pieces together. And history is like a giant jigsaw puzzle. I mean, huge, where you can't even see the picture on the box. I mean, we see where we are right now, but in order to get a proper understanding, we need to be able to put these pieces into their proper place. And you know, I went to public school, I went to high school, I had some college, but not history, and then I graduated from Bible college, and in all of my 12 years, elementary, high school, we had history every year, and so you would think in 12 years that you would learn a whole lot. You have world history, U.S. history, you have all this emphasis on history every year. You would think in 12 years that, my goodness, surely you'd learn everything that you need to learn during those years. But when I think back on it, I never really began to understand history until I went to Bible college. And the reason that helped me so much is what I believe today. You cannot even properly understand true history without connecting or without putting into place the spiritual pieces. Because so many times in especially public school, of course, there's not an emphasis placed on the spiritual or what has happened from a biblical standpoint, and you just cannot understand history. I really believe this with all my heart, and this is one of the reasons I stress this so much. You just cannot understand history without viewing it from a biblical viewpoint. If you just look at it from the secular viewpoint, you'll never be able to learn from history. You'll never get the true picture of what was really going on unless we go back and look at what was God doing during this time. For example, and I'm talking about putting the spiritual pieces of the puzzle into the picture in order to get a true picture of history and to be able to learn from it. For example, you won't learn this in school you won't learn very much about it in secular school, but if you study church history, if you go all the way back to the book of Acts in the Bible, which is where the early church really got its start, After Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, what you learn, if you study, for example, the missionary journeys of the Apostle Paul, and probably most every Bible in the back has maps, and most of them have mapped out the missionary journeys of the Apostle Paul. And if you study about just his life, for example, you'll find out that the movement of Christianity went westward from the book of Acts, from Jerusalem. In all those maps, you'll find that it didn't go towards the east, it went towards the west. And of course, the very last journey of Paul, he ended up in prison in Rome, and that was the farthest that he went. But we find that that Christianity went westward. It went into to modern-day Europe. It went into the British Isles. And from there, of course, many, many years later, was brought to America. But wherever true Christianity, wherever the Bible flourishes, you will find what I call freedom movements. If you had an overlay map, I remember growing up, you know, we had encyclopedias. And in those encyclopedias, there was some of them, they would have overlays. And they were clear pieces of paper. And I remember even going down to my grandparents' house, and they had one for an engine. And it had the outside of the engine. You could turn the page. It had another layer and another layer. It had one for the human body. And those were always so interesting. You know, we'd sit down and look at the encyclopedia. I'm sure most young people today have never even been introduced to a real encyclopedia, because you have all these things on computers. But anyway, if you had an overlay of church history and real world history, what you would find is wherever the Bible went, wherever true Christianity went, you would find that there were freedom movements all throughout history. That's because as men and women, boys and girls, different societies, as they were introduced into the Bible and to Bible-believing Christianity, they were also introduced, many of them for the very first time in their lives, they were introduced to the concept of freedom and liberty. And if you go back to from the Bible days of Christianity all the way forward, you will find as these people were introduced to Christianity, they had never had freedom, real freedom, but the Bible introduced them to this idea of freedom, of being free and having liberty. For example, Jesus said in John chapter 8 and verse 32, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." Now, if you lived during the Middle Ages, under the jurisdiction of some king or some feudal lord of some kind, you didn't really know what freedom was. This was a new concept. But as people were introduced to Christianity, they were introduced to freedom. Galatians chapter 5 and verse 1 says, "Stand fast therefore in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free." That word liberty means freedom. Christ has made us free. Leviticus, even in the Old Testament, what I say every week when I come on the radio broadcast, Leviticus 25:10, proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. The liberty movement, even today and all down through history, you'll find different, what I called a few moments ago, freedom movements, periods of time in history where men became especially interested in the idea of freedom, and a man having a individual soul liberty is what they called it. You will find that that is founded in the Bible. The idea of liberty is founded in the Bible. We the people, where did they get the idea of liberty from? They got the idea from the Bible. They did not get the idea of freedom from kings or landlords or the pharaohs. I mean, just go back as far as you want to. You will not find a king in history that would stand up and say, you know what the people need? They need less of me and more of freedom. No, ruler's law is different from the people's law. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. I had an example out of the book, The 5,000-Year Leap. On page 11, it has 12 characteristics of ruler's law. No, 11 characteristics. The 11th one says, the long history of ruler's law is one of blood and terror, both anciently and in modern times. Under it, the people are stratified into an aristocracy of the ruler's retinue, while the lot of the common people is one of perpetual poverty, excessive taxation, stringent regulations, and a continuous existence of misery. So under ruler's law, they were not introduced to freedom or having more freedoms. They were introduced to more what we would call today laws, more regulations, more control by the ruler. They did not get the idea of freedom from the kings. They got the idea of freedom from the Bible. And here's the thing that we need to keep in mind if you're really going to understand history, is that once the soul is set free, then there is a natural God-given desire for the body and the spirit to follow, for this freedom of soul, individual soul liberty is what it's called when you study it out, to be manifested in a person's natural life. If my soul can be set free, then they got the idea, hey, my spirit is set free, my body ought to be set free. As they studied the Bible, they found out that God intended for man to be free. And that's why in the Declaration of Independence, it talks about certain unalienable rights, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They got these ideas originally from the Bible. And it may have been manifested in different places and by different people, but the idea comes from the Bible. I'll show you some of these things this morning. And I talked about this 2 weeks ago, ruler's law versus people's law. And I've got to finish this or I'll never get done. I'm going to try my best to make the parallels here today. I'm not going to go back over the characteristics of the ruler's law. I think probably you understand what that's talking about. Rule by a ruler, a king, a dictator, whatever you want to call it today. Ruler's law, the founders of this nation, they understood what that was because they were living under it, under the rule of King George. Now, I want to share something with you. This is from an author, Gilbert Chouinard, his book, Thomas Jefferson, The Apostle of Americanism. And he says this in that book. He says, Jefferson's great ambition at that time, talking about 1776, was to promote a renaissance of Anglo-Saxon primitive institutions on the new continent. He wanted to promote a revival of the Anglo-Saxon primitive institutions. That's what the book says. And then he goes on and he says, thus presented, the American Revolution was nothing but the reclamation of the Anglo-Saxon birthright of which the colonists had been deprived by a long trend of abuses. Now, if you go back and study English common law, they were supposed to have more freedoms than the American colonists were having. And that was part of their struggle during that time. They were appealing to King George just for the laws that were already in place. But as the Declaration of Independence points out, they had been deprived of these freedoms, it says in the Declaration of Independence, by a long trend of abuses. And so Jefferson wanted to get back to simply this Anglo-Saxon English common law that goes back to the British Isles. This came from a study of the Bible. There's also a great parallel between the Anglo-Saxon common law and the common law of ancient Israel. I took one radio broadcast, this has been probably a year ago now, but I went through Exodus chapter number 18 and pointed out where they got rule by the people, where Moses went to his father-in-law Jethro, and he was being wore out because the people were coming to him every day. They were standing in line all day long to ask Moses about certain subjects to get him to settle disputes. And when Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, seen this, he said, and this is paraphrasing this morning, this is going to wear you out. He said, take the people and make rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, rulers of tens. Let them take the small matters to these men, and then they will only come to you with the large matters. And so we have a system of government set up in ancient Israel. But let me share with you. This is from, again, the 5,000-year leap. I'm going to give seven or eight examples of what the people's law was. And this is also from English Constitutional and Legal History by Colin Rise Lovell. But here's some examples of the Anglo-Saxon common law, which is where Jefferson got some of his ideas from, and the early founders as well, because the book also says that Adams was not surprised or shocked or any of his contemporaries when these ideas were set forth. Number one, they considered themselves a commonwealth of free men. Maybe you've heard the phrase before, every man's home is his castle. Well, that didn't come from American thought, because there were no castles in America. When people came, they didn't come and build castles. The idea of every man's home is his castle came from English common law. Every man was a free man. Number two, all decisions and the selection of leaders had to be with the consent of the people, preferably by full consensus, not just a majority. So the decisions came from the people, not from the ruler. This is different from ruler's law. The laws by, number three, the laws by which they were governed were considered natural laws given by divine dispensation and were so well known by the people they did not have to be written down. So the ancient Anglo-Saxon common law, the laws were considered to be given by divine dispensation. They were so well known among the people they didn't have to be written down. There are some laws that you just know are right, and they don't have to be written down. And we also find this in the ancient law of Israel, the Ten Commandments. People who go and study other societies, other people in the world, who go into jungles and tribes, they find that they have a common law among them, thou shalt not kill. It may not be written down, but they know that murder is wrong. They know that adultery is wrong, stealing another man's wife. They know that stealing somebody else's property is wrong. There's some things that mankind knows is wrong and he should not do. Number four, power was dispersed among the people and never allowed to concentrate in any one person or group. Number five, primary responsibility for resolving problems rested first of all with the individual, then the family, then the tribe or community, then the region, and finally the nation. Number six, they were organized into small, manageable groups where every adult had a voice and a vote. They divided the people into units of 10 families who elected a leader, then 50 families who elected a leader, then 100 families who elected a leader, and then 1,000 families who elected a leader. Now, let me tell you, they got that from Exodus chapter number 18. You can read it over there yourself. It's even the same breakup of the numbers there. Where did they get these ideas from? They got them from the Bible, the children of Israel. Number seven, they believed the rights of the individual were considered unalienable and cannot be violated without risking the wrath of divine justice as well as civil retribution by the people's judges. They believed the rights of the individual were unalienable. That word unalienable means that it cannot be transferred. The king cannot take it away. Nobody can take away. And that's where our Declaration of Independence talks about certain unalienable rights. Number eight, the system of justice was structured on the basis of severe punishment unless there was complete reparation to the person who had been wronged. So for a capital punishment, there was severe punishment. If somebody stole something, they had to pay it back. This also is based on the Bible, Exodus chapter number 19. Number 9, they always attempted to solve problems on the level where the problem originated. If this was impossible, they went no higher than was absolutely necessary to get a remedy. Usually only the most complex problems involving the welfare of the whole people or a large segment of the people ever went to the leaders for solution. We have this same principle in our American civil government. Start at the local level. Go to the community, the county, the district, the state, the federal. You see how you're going up the line. And, you know, if you have a traffic ticket out here, you don't take it to the Supreme Court. You go to the local level. You try to solve things at the local level. You get that principle from the Bible as well. Now, that was 9 characteristics of the people's law that you find if you study the Anglo-Saxon tradition, which comes from the British Isles. Now, page number 15 on the 5,000-year leap says this: as the founders studied the record of the ancient Israelites, they were intrigued by the fact that they also operated under a system of laws remarkably similar to those of the Anglo-Saxons. So the Anglo-Saxons, what did they find out? They found out that they got their example of government from the children of Israel. And I've got 7 or 8 examples here. My time will quickly get gone, but let me just share them with you. Let me say, just as a historical side note, in Connecticut, the Reverend Thomas Hooker wrote this, the Fundamental Orders of Connecticut. He based these fundamental orders on the principles that you find in Deuteronomy chapter number 1. And these were adopted in 1639, and when Connecticut and Rhode Island copied this from Connecticut. When the colonies switched over to be individual states, where the emphasis was on self-government, all of the colonies had to write a new constitution based upon the Constitution. And all of our states have their own constitution, but Connecticut and Rhode Island had to do very little to change over their constitution because it was already based on the idea of self-government, which they got the idea from the Bible, from God's Word. So let me just mention a few things about the common law, the people's law of ancient Israel. They were set up as a commonwealth of free men. Leviticus 25:10 proclaimed liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. All the people were organized into small, manageable units. I've already mentioned that in Exodus chapter number 18. You can read that on your own. The emphasis was on a strong local self-government. That's what I've already mentioned, that they would take the small matter to the family leader, and then they would go up the line from there. Number 4, the entire code of justice was based on reparation, which is paying somebody back, except for the most horrific crimes, murder, things along those lines. They were met with capital punishment. Number 5, leaders were elected and new laws approved by the consent of the people. You even find this in the Bible. Read 2 Samuel chapter number 2, 1 Chronicles chapter number 29, 2 Chronicles chapter number 10. To find examples of these. Number 6, accused persons were presumed to be innocent until proven guilty. That is a very important part of American government, of the American judicial system, innocent until proven guilty. Where do you find that example from? You find it from the Bible, God's Word. Evidence had to be strong enough to remove any question of doubt. That is why that you find the phrase in the mouth of 2 or 3 witnesses, let something be established. When before Jesus went to the cross, they found false witnesses to come and testify against them. And so we find many, many examples of the idea of freedom, the idea of liberty. I've got a message that I have preached at the church and I preached a message called Why Freedom Fires Me Up. And basically the gist of the message is this: because freedom, the idea of freedom, comes from God, not from man. And today, and I'll say this in closing, today in America, there is a great struggle once again between ruler's law and the people's law. We find more and more every year the idea of we the people is being castigated. Those who support freedom, those who support the Constitution, those who support liberty are being vilified, especially in the mainstream media, by many who are rulers in government. Those who support freedom are being slandered. For example, quickly, Sarah Palin, right as soon as this guy, Loeffner, when he did these shootings out in Arizona, before they even knew any of the details, and I watched it myself with my own eyes. I'd been outside and I came in, and I think my wife told me, you know, there'd been a shooting in Arizona, and I sat down and I turned in the news. While they were blaming Sarah Palin for this, and if there's anybody that supports freedom and talks about it, she probably talks about it as much as anybody else. Freedom, liberty, let people have freedom to make their own way, be accountable for their actions. She talks about it. She had been slandered, vilified, and she didn't have anything to do with it. The real reason why the principles of freedom are so under attack today is because these principles are drawn from the Bible. In fact, they could be literally called, liberty could be called a Bible doctrine. Individual soul liberty is a Bible doctrine. It's not taught in every church, but it's taught in many churches. It's certainly taught in our church today, individual soul liberty. And the reason it's so under attack, I believe, is a spiritual reason as much as anything else, because it's not just a political battle, it is a spiritual battle. And that is because we're living in the last days. And if you are a student of prophecy, you know that what the Bible has to say, the book of Revelation and other places like that, in the Bible, we are living in the last days. In the last days, there's a man will come who is called in the Bible the Antichrist. He will rule the globe with an iron fist, and a republic like America cannot stand under his domain. And so America is under attack. This is not just a political battle going on today. It is a spiritual battle. I'm going to read in closing Revelation chapter number 12 and verse number 9. This is a good picture of the battle that is going on today. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceived the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, "Now has come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knoweth that he hath but a short time." And that's close to the time we're living in today. And I believe that's why there's such an uproar over the subject of freedom, because the devil knows that he has but a short time. But I've read the rest of the chapter and the rest of the book, and I know who's on the winning side. So I appreciate you listening in. Be sure and listen in next Tuesday at this same time to the Blessings of Liberty Radio.